Welcome to Woke at Work, episode 8, our final episode of the season. I really can't believe it, Blanca. I feel like it flew by. Do you?
I know. Not only that, but look at us. We're like we're doing two things at once. We're trying new things towards the end, you know.
Yes, girl.
Flexibility, which we're going to talk a lot about today. But yes. Whole episodes have passed and
we started recording this all the way back in January. It feels like forever ago. We survived a pandemic. What else have we survived? A lot. 2020 has been
the pandemic is history making in itself. I don't know. We're surviving. We're trying to get through a pandemic. So
right. Oh, true. And a whole revolution, right? Like a Black revolution. Lives Matter take two. You know, yes. Well,
we could do MTV at the end of each year, how they have the like, remember when we could do that. That'll be episode 8B. We just gotta, you know, figure out how to do that. That's not today though.
No, well, you and I, we realized that we had done all these episodes and hadn't even really had a conversation about education, which is wild. You know, we've talked about, you know, equity in the workplace. We've talked about women in the C-suite. We've talked about, you know, maternity needs and why Black women, you know, why we and our babies are dying at a rate that's not, you know, not equitable. If that I didn't say that right, but why we're dying at higher rates than our white counterparts. And so we've had all these really important conversations, but you and I are educators. Like, you know, we came into this as teachers. You've been a school principal. I say once an educator, always an educator, even though I'm in a different line of work right now. Like, I am a teacher through and through. Yeah. And so I think it's important for us to have this conversation, especially as parents are gearing up. It is August 2020 right now, and parents are gearing up to either send their kids back to school or leave them home permanently. I have a girlfriend who's a doctor, and she has one of her exam rooms set up as a classroom right now, okay, for her daughter. It's real right now. Yeah. And so...
We haven't talked about it. We haven't, and I mean, I will say that in the 20 plus years of being in education, this is never right. This has never happened. There's been other stuff, right? When I started teaching, it was September 11th was happening around then. That was its own historical moment, and I'll, you know, forever remember that. And this wasn't a one time event, and so this is like an ongoing. And I think. The intersectionality for us, or the multiple identities, I feel like we as parents who are gearing up for figuring out our kids' situation for schooling, for us both former teachers. I work closely still with a lot of principals, a lot of people who are in education, a lot of teachers. I have teacher friends, you know, but it's been a hot topic. It's been highly emotional, a lot of personalization. And I've seen it in my own kids' school, and just in conversations as I coach a lot of principals, like, well, what's going to happen, right? And so,
I will admit that when this all first started, I thought kids were going to be out of school for a couple weeks. Like back in March, you know, I serve on the board of an organization here in Brooklyn, Re718, and the executive director called when this all first went down, and she, you know, we were trying to game plan, and I was like, you know, I don't think there's a need for us to port our services online. You know, let's give kids a break for a couple weeks. Like I thought it was going to be like 2 weeks and then things are going to be back to normal. And here we are. All these months later, you know, and most of our country still doesn't have a real actionable plan. Colleges have opened and closed again already. Within a week or two of opening up. And so I think that, you know, as parents, like you said, you and I really have a dual role right now as parents, as former educators, as you as someone who is still leading educators and principals in this work and helping them to really grapple with what this moment means for them and their schools. You and I have made the decision to keep our kids home, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, this has been an ongoing So my husband and I decided when school ended, we were like, there is not a vaccine. And so it's still there. And we were in the epicenter. We wrote it out. We didn't leave New York. Like, we were here when it all went down, and we took it, you know, really seriously. I didn't see my mom. I didn't, you know, we didn't see people. We didn't engage. We didn't interact. And so we knew then.
Was that shade? Because I left New York.
No. A lot of people were.
I packed up. I panicked. I am not a ride or die New Yorker.
Though you weren't alone.
I know many people packed up and left. Like, oh my gosh, like I was literally in a state of panic. So
people were like, I'm going to rent an Airbnb out in Georgia or go in the South. I know people who straight up left. And so they were like, I'm visiting somebody else. New York is not the place I'm gonna be at. And that's fine. Like, that's, and I know people who were like in education who did it, right? Like, they were teachers who were working out of people's homes. And I only say that to say that we locked ourselves in. We took the lockdown really extremely, and we didn't see people. And so we knew then, and we're not like hypochondriacs. It's not this, we don't like it. That's not an issue for us. But part of me was like, this spread stopped because we stopped functioning the way that we knew what was our normal every day. Right.
Yeah.
And so we decided then, we're like, there's not a cure. I mean, there were several factors. Like, one, it was not a cure that we, you know, or anything that let us know that it was over. Two, our kids are in public schools, and systematically public schools, especially out here, have not been the places that have been provided for, right? Like, they have not, the health, the air quality, the resources, like, I mean, having soap in there in the bathroom, like,
right, basics.
Like, we're talking about basics, and all of a sudden you want to overpromise that we're getting all of these things. I was like, I'm not so sure about that. And then as time went on, I think the big thing for me more recently is a lot of folks are like, well, what should I do? Like, I'm like, you make a decision that's best for you. Mm-hmm. We have the ability and the privilege to work from home. So, like, I want to make that clear that both of us have the ability and the privilege to work from home. That's a challenge. I did not have any work in the work stream in the very beginning. As most of you all know, I do a lot of anti-racism work and so racial justice work. So when the murder of George Floyd happened, then all of a sudden, when all the protests started happening, then people were like, oh, let's get some workshops. And all
there's
of a sudden,
this thing, right? Like, it's called racism. I say it's like people acted like black folk just got invented and they just heard about this thing called racism, right? That's how folks were acting. So it is interesting because when this first happened, you know, I was concerned because I know that that's how you took this leap of faith, you know, like we've talked about so many times on this podcast. Last year to go into business for yourself and to do this work full time. And when the pandemic happened and everything shut down, I was like, okay, Blanca, invoice us. What do you need? Like, you know, let's get you paid or whatever. And then, like you said, all of a sudden George Floyd is killed. And now, girl, every time I'm talking to you, you're like, okay, I got a workshop. I got 15 minutes in between his workshop. Let's talk, you know, like, you're busy now, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's a blessing. It's beautiful. And my kids have like had way too much screen time. So like, it's a challenge. So I say all of that to say we have the privilege. That is our current privilege to be able to work from home. And it's a challenge. So it's not easy for any working parent to have to work and parent. It's sure as hell not any easier working when your children are at home. So like, none of that is easy. Right. But I mean, so for us, we do have that. So if we had that, it was, you know, then let's take advantage of it. And then part of it is like, there are other families who don't have that. So our space is like, we don't need to take up a space, right? Like, we don't need that.
Yeah, and that's the exact, that was our thinking as well. There's not a vaccine. Schools are just germ factories. Like, every September when we start school here in New York, when I was teaching, I just counted on being sick. I was like, okay, I know I'm gonna get sick like the second or third week of school. You know, it was like that every single year because, you know, kids are sharing pencils and they're dropping pencils and they're snotting on their desks and, you know, they're handing in dirty papers and I'm grading dirty papers. So of course you get sick and, you know, schools just have no way to control for that. And like you said, a lot of people would be surprised at the state of school buildings here in New York. Like, these buildings are very, very old. And our son's principal was talking about how the ventilation systems, like some of the stairways don't even have ventilation. And he was like, I don't know what we're going to do about that, you know? And so I was like, okay, yeah, we'll sit this out for now. See what happens. Again, that's a place of privilege that that Sean and I have, but then also it's an equity issue and so much of education. Like, I used to say that I thought that education was the civil rights issue of our time. I don't know if that's true anymore because, you know, we are literally being killed by the state, and the state, of course, is not holding the state accountable for those deaths. And so it may not be like the seminal civil rights issue of the time, but it is still, if it's not number one, it's number two, in my opinion. And I think that this pandemic has only made that more clear and is only going to make it worse. And so for us, like you said, there are students who need to be in the building. There are students who have IEPs. There are students who need access to food and who need, you know, whatever extra support and safety the school building provides. That's not the case. Would I like my kids to be in a school building? Absolutely. Right. You know, for their own well-being, for my own well-being, but we can sacrifice it this year so that other students who do need access, can have that space. So yeah, you and I, you know, we made the same decision. And I think as parents, especially parents whose work requires us to be on the computer and actually working, like, that's a sacrifice. Like, so many parents right now are like, what am I going to do? How am I going to manage this? You've heard the funny things, like, my daughter brought the computer into the bathroom while I was in the shower because she needed help. And so everybody, not me, this is not my story. I'm telling somebody else's story.
But on social media.
Right. Yes. You know, so the classroom saw a mom naked. You got the funny stuff, but then you have the other stuff that's frustrating. Like, you know, women already carry a huge part of the burden of raising children. And I think that, you know, that's another thing that the country kind of woke up to during this pandemic. They're like, oh, women really do more, right? Like, oh, this is actually very difficult. Where, you know, even in my house, my husband has his office and his studio and he can come down here and be down here all day long. Meanwhile, I'm up in the kitchen trying to manage a call with one hand, stir lunch with the other hand, pet the dog, answer the door, order lunch, you know what I'm saying? And I shared about this earlier, like, we had to get that together.
So that's the thing, is like, what I've been telling people is like, there's no winning right now, right? There is no real winning. There's opportunities, right? And one of the things we are gonna say, like, what are the opportunities right now?
Yeah,
but like, there is no real winning here, right? And so I would love to see, I mean, I know people are posting all over different things that are happening, but I'm like, who's knocking it out of the park?
Right.
That's so good.
That's freeing to think about. I like that. There's no winning right now. Right. That's like a burden lifted.
But I might not win for 5 days. Like, I don't know. I take those small victories. So I think the perspective too in all of this, whether I am a teacher, I am a parent, or I am whatever field I'm in, because I imagine doctors are going through this. We haven't gone through this before. So it's like an expert, right? An expert on how to do this. There are experiences that work for people. And so, you know, I will say that what happened from March to June, at least over here in terms of schooling, we had to reframe. We're going to reframe that in the fall in September, right? Mm-hmm. So like, kids were in pajamas. They got up. It was like cold in the eye. It was like, oh, you know. But now it's like, well, okay. Now that we know this is the state of school, then we're going to actually set this all up as if it's school.
And girl, so, in this house, we were like, Zay is supposed to be on a Zoom call. Who's got the link?
And I know.
Like, told y'all, I emailed you the link. Somebody get her on there. It's like, Vanny's supposed to be doing this. Oh, she missed it. She missed the whole thing. Yeah, she missed the whole thing. Girl, we were crazy. Like, it was wild. We could not function. But like you said, it's like, okay, now we know that this is the case. This is what we're dealing with. Like, girl, they about to have a classroom. They about to have a schedule. They about to meet teacher mommy all over again.
I do want to say that, like, even the making space conversation, the equity conversation, this has been a source of tension and like debate. And I think when we start to use equity, a lot of people think of like racial equity. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think of students who have additional needs, and like what additional needs mean is not just IEP mandates, right? It is some, but there are some children who are still like, we don't know, right? This is a pandemic. This is a traumatizing event. We have no idea what's going to transpire after this. And so, but then there are families who are essential workers who have like, I want to keep my kids safe. And therefore, like, I have to figure out what to do with them. I don't know what to do with them. You know, like, we cannot do that. We don't have people who are willing to help. And so, so I know that, like, when we're thinking about equity, and it's just that everyone has different needs. Mm-hmm. I also think about community and equity, and like, what does that mean to think about this as a community, right? And so, I don't know. I've been in various conversations, and I would just push us to think about what is motivating, like, what is the rationale and what is the purpose? And one of the things I've been hearing a lot about is that our kids need social emotional support, or that they're lacking in that, and so. Are schools going to be those places, right? Can teachers really tend to the social emotional needs with everyone 6 feet apart and everyone having masks on, right?
Right. Or having to do that, like my son's school, having to manage an actual classroom and then just as many students online at the same time. Like, I mean, I already felt like what we were asking teachers to do as educators was a tall order, right? Let me give you 25 new kids every year that you don't know, and it's going to take you several months to know. And then I want you to make sure they all can do the exact same thing really, really well by the end of the school year. Like, that's just a tall order. And so now we're asking them to do that, plus attend to social emotional needs, plus be tech experts, and really having to revamp the entire way that they manage, behavior manage classrooms, because now you're virtual and there's a chat and there's all kinds of things going on. And so, yeah, what we're asking teachers to do is difficult. And I like what you said about, you know, equity and talking about from a community perspective. Like, that's one of the things that's been on my mind. And I've really been working on creating like this virtual co-op space, girl. I wish I had never.
Ray has 45 hours in a day. Who's like, I'm on the board of this, I'm doing it, I'm cooking, I'm sitting here setting up virtual something. I'm like, what hours do you have? Girl. And get them during this pandemic. You home with your kids all the time.
I know. I don't have these hours, girl. That's why it's not set up yet. I keep saying I'm thinking about it. Like, I'm working on it. I might.
That's somebody out there want to figure out how to coordinate. I think she's asking. I mean, I'm saying the same thing for my kids' school, by the way. So I don't know why I'm telling you that, but I was like,
I know you just as bad, girl, but I'm really, really what impressed my heart to do it is because, you know, I am an educator, and this is pretty much teaching is all I've done for most of my adult, you know, life. And I've been a homeschooler. I homeschooled my kids for about 6 years. And so there's some level of comfort that I have even during this time that I know other parents don't have. And so I've been thinking, what does it look like to come together as a community and share resources and provide spaces for our kids to get together? As much as I don't have the time, I feel like this moment is calling us to all to kind of rise above, you know, and give and contribute to the community. And so this is going to be my offering, if I can get it off the ground. But then I'm also thinking about, like, equity from a mental health standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. For our children, but yes, but also parents. And I posted on my Instagram a couple weeks ago this caption that I thought was great. I saw it on Facebook. One of my friends had posted it, and it was just like basically saying, whatever kind of mother you are, whether you're the kind of mother that's homeschooling, virtual schooling, sending your kids back to school, guess what you are? A good mom. And girl, the amount of comments that post got, I was like, the mommy wars are still alive and well.
This is that mom guilt, that parent guilt that comes in. And so the irony is that, like, we're the podcast is Woke at Work. And so what does it mean for us to be women of color at work, and work for us is now at home, has a whole other like realm, right? And so our mother hat and our education hat are all blending here. And so I'm just thinking about all the guilt though that, you know, that we feel about this whole, about it all, about
right.
all.
And the guilt that we put on each other. Like, you know, one of the things I was saying in the comments was like, listen, because people were like, no, if you're the kind of mom that's sending your kids to school during a pandemic, you're not a good mom. How could you? You know, my kids come first. And I'm like, you don't know her life. Like, you don't know her situation. First of all, she could be an essential worker, like you said, Blanca, and really need the school building in order to be able to go and do her work. But then also, and this is definitely a provocative, you know, thing to say, maybe she's not a good mom when she's around her kids 24/7, right? Like, some moms are just better moms when they don't have to be in their kids' faces all the time. And some folks are like, oh, that's selfish. That's not a legitimate reason to send your kids to school. Maybe not for you, but maybe for that mom, her literal life depends on her being able to spend some time away from her children. Like, we don't know people's situation, right? And so I'm just choosing to suspend judgment during this time and trust that everybody is trying to make the best decision possible, you know?
Right. No, this is the part I was on AQE, Alliance for Quality Education, has a Freedom Summer program that they do. And like for parents on Tuesday night, you have to apply. So I joined a few, you know, like not a few, like about 30 people, 25 parents on it. And one of the things we were talking about, like the conversation was around ableism, but one of the conversations that we started to talk about was around mental health. And like people think of, even when we think of who needs to go back, that concept of who needs to go back, there's like this profile that we might be creating in our head of who needs to go back, right? Students who have these things or students who look like this. Mm-hmm. And I just think about, we have yet, and I think someone wrote this on your Instagram, like we have yet to see the long-term impact of this moment, right? Yeah. So it is a form, like it is a, when you think of trauma, and I'm no psychologist, so forgive me those of you who are out there and I'm butchering all of this, but when we think of trauma, I have research and thought about trauma work, but when you think of trauma, it's like something that impacts your life, right? Something that has an effect on you. So like, even when we think about children and you're in schools and you're like, has there been any change? Have there been any family dynamic change? All these things. We have literally stopped all that we deem normal for a while.
Yeah.
Like, kids are processing this. Their adults are processing this. Their teachers are processing this. We haven't even touched on like the weight of leaders who are trying to figure this out, right? And so when kids go back, right? And one of the other reasons I didn't want to send them back. I said I didn't want my children to be policed for masks and all of those small things where they would feel restricted in an environment, in an educational system that already restricts our Black and brown people.
Quality education activities should not be something only the rich can afford. This is Ray King, here to tell you about an opportunity that your family has to join my family's learning co-op this school year. You may have heard of parents forming learning pods where they're hiring teachers to help privately educate a small group of their children this school year.
Well, what my husband Sean and I have formed is similar, except it's super affordable, available to families all over the world, and will be focused on enrichment classes that will support your child's regular school or homeschool curriculum. Classes like poetry and protest, the civil rights movement, taught by Sean, algebra help, dyeing fabrics with natural products, and so much more. I've designed this co-op to allow all of the children in your household to take as many classes as they want each week for as little as $50 a month. That's less than I pay for one trumpet class for just one of my kids each month. I'm also happy to announce that I've partnered with I Raise Girls and Boys International, a nonprofit serving the Bronx, New York, to offer their families free or nearly free admission to this co-op. But in order to do that, I need as many paying families to join as possible. So your co-op membership not only benefits your family, but supports a family in need as well. Finally, a major benefit of co-ops is the community that's built among kids and parents. We're all feeling a little more isolated this year as we're stuck spending way more time in the house than usual. And our kids are missing interaction with their friends from school and their friends from their extracurricular activities. Hands In Co-op will have private chat forums for parents and specialty interest groups for kids. Join our community now at patreon.com/handsincoop. The registration deadline is September 7th, so go to patreon.com/handsincoop now to join our learning community.
That's so deep, Blanca. And honestly, that is not even something I had even thought about, right? What does it mean for Black and Brown kids who already have eyes on them? And we've seen the videos of the way that the NYPD specifically is targeting Black and Brown communities for people not wearing masks. Yet you go to, you know, the Upper West Side, or you go to, you know, some of these parks that are frequented by white folks, and they literally passing out masks to these people. But we get arrested and brutalized for it. So you're right. That's not even something that I considered when you talk about a school environment, right? And now how many people are getting harassed for not wearing masks?
And the reality is like, it's a safety issue. You need to wear masks. Yes, because as a teacher, I chose to come here expecting to be kept safe too, and to keep the classroom. So like, you know, but for me as a choice, you know, as someone, like, I have a choice, I didn't want that. And so so the mental health part of all of this, right? So many people, you know, I've spoken to people who are like, I haven't hugged people, like, right? I haven't, like, for months they didn't hug someone. Yeah. So many people who, like, babies with, and you are a elementary school, primary school person, but people work with babies, like, just love to hug their students and, like, that has been lost, and that has been part of their, like, teacher identity, and the idea of going back to school and not providing that.
Yeah, because that's a big, like, part of it, right? Oh my gosh, Blanca, you're making me think of so many things. Like, of course, we were high-fiving and handshaking, and you're right. Like, I taught little kids, and we used to talk about how they still need lap time, and, you know, they want to hug their teachers, and they want to hold your hand as you're walking down the hallway to the bathroom, and all of that's gone, right? So what does that look like?
And that's what I mean, for me, and I want to keep saying that, and this isn't a judgment thing, for me, when I walked into my son's first grade classroom and I saw the community that they built sitting on that rug, and like the kids like coming up to each other, hugging up to each other, and the joy that he felt as a Black Latino male, like who still loves school, and that's what he associated with school, that he wasn't going to have that. He said, I want to be a first grade teacher, based on, shout out to his first grade teachers.
First grade's the best grade.
Shout out to Miss Rose, Miss Tyson, Miss E, so shout out to all of them, but they created an environment where they, like, it was love, and it was love based on community and like physical, like, space and all that. And so I just had to think, like, I don't want him to not, if he wants to hate homeschool or school at home, hate that, but don't going into the building. And so, like, that's just that. And I just was thinking about the traumatic experience that is.
What do you think are some opportunities? Like,
So what does this mean? What are some opportunities? This is what I ask people. We talk a lot about, I do workshops on like white supremacy culture and like the internalization of it and what that means. But I've talked about it in the context of like, sometimes we default, whenever there's times of crisis, we default to things, right? Like we just, right? You ever been on a good workout routine? You've been eating healthy and then something happens and you box your world. And what do? You go grab some ice cream. You're like, I don't want to work out today or tomorrow or the next day, right? So all we need is something to shake.
That's my life. 100%. My life.
But like for the cultural part is like, well, what would it look like for us to do stuff differently? Like, what would it look like for us to have opportunities to do differently? And so I've thought a lot about that to help framing it for teachers, right? Because the system of education wasn't always equitable anyway, right? So like,
it definitely wasn't, girl. And I'm really thankful for this time, this kind of resurgence of equity conversations in education spaces. Sean and I were on a parent town hall with our son's principal, and he was talking real woke. Like, I was like, okay, you know, like having trouble, like not signifying in there and like talking back at him. Like, yes, I know that's right. Talk about it, because... Girl, he was just talking about how they were trying to be attentive to equity issues and making sure that the way that they set up this learning, because, you know, New York is doing a hybrid system for the most part, where, you know, kids are coming to school one day a week or maybe a couple of days a week and then learning remote the rest of the days. That's an option. Or we can choose to be completely remote. And he's very, very concerned about making sure that certain students aren't getting an advantage over others because of the different options that they choose. And he, speaking about opportunity, sees this as an opportunity to really revamp what he called racist curriculum within New York school systems, that he said has been that way since forever, right? And so like that, to me, when I think about the opportunities in this moment, as a parent, I'm like, you know, so much of education is culture, right? Like, we learn what's acceptable, what isn't acceptable, how do we speak, what is professional, all these buzzwords, you know, these are things that we pick up, what we call like the hidden curriculum, in a school environment, right? And so my teacher might not say you talk ghetto, or they might, okay, because that has been known to be said. Right. Yeah. But by the way they correct something that you say, you get the message that however you came into the building, whatever your speech and your dialect was when you entered, needs to be different when you're there. Right. You get that message. And so I feel like one of the opportunities that I have as a parent is to do some like decolonization work with my students. What are the ways in which what are the ways in which my kids have been socialized into white supremacy culture that I can break down during this time where I have them at home? How can I center their history, their heroes, as a vantage point, as a learning point for them during this time, in a way that they wouldn't get when they were, if they were going to be in school? So that's for me, that's how I'm looking at this as an opportunity, you know, having my kids at home. What are you telling educators when you do these workshops about ways that they can break down white supremacy? Or listen, girl, you do need
to give it to people for free. You got to.
That's about to say. Okay.
Pay your women of color. Venmo me. And no, I'm kidding. So when I think of it like a system level too. Like, so there are a few things, and then there's things that we've done at home that have been. So I would say that, first of all, as a parent, this has been an opportunity for me to think about my parenting differently. Like, we are together all the time. So at some point I'm done. Like, just, we're done. Like, mommy has had no, I'm an introvert in terms of how I derive my energy. And so I need, like, I walked places oftentimes. Anyone saw me walking in the street, I was always walking places because I needed that time. Mm-hmm. So we've just revolutionized. Like, I've just had to stop and think about, I have a friend, shout out to my friend Nicole, whose children have started to make their own podcast, right? So like, and in it, they're practicing what it means to like ask interview questions. And so like, there's some things that we can do as like parents that maybe, you know, like, they're not normal. I joked, but I didn't joke. But, you know, at some point, my husband used to be a bartender, so he taught them how to, like, use different mixed drink stuff to, like, mix apple juice and, like, this thing. And if you put some lime, what's the taste? And so, like, why does it taste like that? And then people are like, what you like? With, minus the alcohol, y'all, so don't go reporting me.
Right.
But the idea is that, like, your drink doesn't have, you know, you don't always have to have apple juice. You can have different mixtures and different things create different, you know, like, whatever. You just have conversations. And so there's that. So there's that side of, like, opportunities, I think, for me to just parent differently than I have. And it's not perfect, and it's not like that every day. There are days that I'm like, I need y'all to go. Mm-hmm. But when I think about teachers and like principals and those things, I've said a few things. One is that remember humanity. So I think the concern that for particularly communities of color, Black and Latino and Black, statistically Black students in schools, and like how this idea they're not performing on a standard at X standard, right? Like they're behind, there's this behind concept. And that this will further create a lag, right? And I'm not going to debate on like whether what this, like, one, we get to reevaluate the standards, right? So, we didn't take a state test this year,
right?
So like, what is that going, you know, some SATs weren't counted for a year. So what does that do for like systemically us thinking about standards, right?
Yeah.
And so what is the bar? The second thing I said is that if you're starting the year repeating the same stuff you taught last year, knowing that for 4 months, the students did not get like a consistent overall education, then there's a problem with how you're starting the year. You haven't checked to see where students are coming from and like, how do you adapt accordingly, right? And so that to me is equity, right? Let me figure out where people are and let figure out how to meet people. Classrooms are traditionally oversized in public schools, right? And so what would be to shrink the sizes, right? Like, what is this an opportunity to say, like, can we do 10 kids in groups and shrink the sizes and then be able to then meet with them different times, right? And so then I'm essentially giving a small classroom environment to students, right?
Right. One of the things I'm thinking about is, you know, I don't know if people really understand this, but the teaching force in this country is so incredibly white. To this day, almost 80% of teachers are white and female. And that statistic, every time I see it, and I literally checked before we started this to see like, okay, is that still the case? And according to the National Center for Education Statistics, it is still the case. As recently as 2018, I'm sorry. The teaching force was overwhelmingly white, but our K-12 population is over 50% Black now. And it's been that, not Black, I'm sorry, students of color. And it's been that way for a couple of years. And so talk about like, you know, the disconnect. There is bound to be a cultural disconnect when you have, you know, gaps that big, and studies continue to show that students of color perform better when their teachers are teachers of color. And not just that, mind you, but Harvard did a study that showed that even white students prefer teachers of color, which, you know, is another thing to think about. So do we have an opportunity as a society, like, to diversify the teaching field now that we're at home, now that you don't have to be physically in a building? You know, like just for my family, you know, one of our kids needs a math tutor, and I went out of my way now to find a Black female math tutor because her other math tutor was a white man, and he was nice, but she hated going to math tutoring. They did not connect. And she was like, "Mommy, he just doesn't get me, yada yada yada." And so now, like, oh, everything's virtual. He used to come to the house because before the mindset was teaching had to be done in person. But now that everything's virtual, okay, what other opportunities are out there? How else can I diversify my kids' education and who's teaching them, you know? And even at Reed 718, you know, where I volunteer, we found that getting volunteers before, it used to be a bit of a press because you had to come to the building, which means in New York, you had to take the subway, walk a little bit and get there. Now that we're virtual, girl, we have extra tutors. Like, we have more tutors than we need. Yeah. And so I really do think there's an opportunity for schools to diversify their staffs now that you can pull from really people all across the country and in several different boroughs. Like, now they don't have to necessarily be close to you. How can we be strategic about diversifying the teaching field right now? It's another thing I'm thinking about.
You're about to give people ideas about some side jobs. They're like, hold on now. Let me figure this out.
You're right. Girl, well, listen, we said we could talk about this for hours.
Can I just say two other things to think about? Like, if you're a teacher or if you're, you know, one of the things I was talking to, and she's a religious listener, so Tasha, this is for you. My homegirl Tasha, who is a principal out in Atlanta. And, you know, we were just talking about, like, her role. And she's like, you know, I miss kids, like, all this stuff, right? She loved the children. Tasha loved the children. But she, you just talk about how, you know, you're not around, you're not walking around, right? And so discipline and that, not in the school is such a loving school. Like, it is one of the most affirming schools that I've ever been into and seen as a whole, not just like this classroom, that classroom, as a whole. And she, you know, what we just talked about, like, discipline structures, right? And so just not necessarily with her school, but like with schools all over, just thinking, how can we reevaluate what it means to discipline? What does discipline mean? What is behavior management? And I think more than now than ever is I have to figure out, if my students are on a screen, how am I managing and really paying attention to students' faces, providing opportunities of engagement? Like, this is a whole other skill development. And so if that's the case, then why am I going back to a school and going to impart and do all of these things to create more oppressive systems? Because when we go back to school, kids will not have engaged the same way, right? Yeah. And so it's time for us to really reevaluate the systems of, like, discipline, behavior management, whichever one that happens. And then the other thing I would say is a revisit of curriculum and like, not just what is in the content, right? But also the how. So if I was doing a lot of direct instruction, right, can I do that and record that stuff, but leverage my time on a screen if they're on a screen, or leverage my time somewhere else, you know, because in New York they're doing a blended learning. So some of it will be recorded, pre-recorded, and the second part won't be. So if I'm not doing that, then how can I have something that's like a project that is stretched over time that hits at different skills, right? And and then that there's some presentation and that families can join in virtually if they need to be able to do it, right? And so, and that invites community, right? And so, so there are different ways. And so that's the thing is that this is, I always like to think that, that sometimes during these moments, these are some tense times, but that with some clarity and with some community and with some other folks, that we can see some opportunities.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, compulsory education in this country has virtually been the same for 100 years. And now we're kind of being forced to shake things up. And I think there, you know, to your point there, there's a lot of opportunity in that. It won't be easy. And there'll be some trial and error for sure. But as parents, as educators, as school leaders, yeah, I think now's a good time to, you know, if you were always, if you've got that thing you've always been wanting to try or wondering what would school look like if this, you know, now might be the time to throw some of that stuff in there, you know, while we're facing this crisis. Okay. So like I said, you and I could talk education for hours. There's so much to say about it, but we've been told that we talk too much on this podcast, not by our listeners, mind you, but by our
go. You've posted some of the reviews. We love to see the reviews. So yes. Keep them coming.
Yes, please. But our sound engineers and all the folks that got to format this podcast are like, you're talking too much. Okay, so.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
We're going to keep it.
Sorry, not sorry.
Right now, a lot of people are working from home, and I don't know about you all, but I can't spend all day in my pajamas. I try and get dressed every single day like I'm going into work.
Girl, same. And as you know, I've always loved dressing up nice for work. I remember my first grown-up job shopping for those nude colored heels you're supposed to wear, and I could not find a single pair to match my brown skin.
A lot of these companies don't have shades for people of color. From shoes to makeup, foundation, they're not all made with Black and brown people in mind.
That's why I absolutely am in love with Rebecca Allen. They are a Black women-owned brand that makes professional footwear in 5 shades of nude to complement women of all different complexions.
Rebecca Allen exists to help all women do their best work. And it's not just about taking the pain points out of your day. They just launched a Fit Expert seller program where you can sign up to earn extra income with them.
So head to Rebecca-Allen.com. That's Rebecca-Allen.com. And use our code WOKE20. That's WOC20 for $20 off your order of $100 or more.
We're going to try to keep it to under an hour. So let's go to our letter from a listener. And this letter comes from, this is not their government name for sure, but their online name is Tattooed Paleo. Isn't that fun? Tattooed Paleo.
And Tattooed Paleo, which a non-government name.
Yeah. So she says, I don't know how to manage my son's ADHD and anxiety while working full time, distance learning, and having 2 other kids to boot. I know it's harder for him to succeed remotely, but I don't know the best way to support. When I saw this, you know, I really connected with it because I have a child who was recently diagnosed with ADHD. We went through all the psych evaluation stuff, and which was a lengthy, expensive process, especially if you're doing it privately outside of the school system, as we did. So, oh my gosh, there's so many equity issues to unpack there for sure. But we went through that process. She was diagnosed with, what the psychiatrist said was like a mild form of ADHD. And honestly, like it's wild to me now, but I hadn't really considered that might be her issue. I knew that she struggled with executive functioning and, you know, some impulsivity, but ADHD, you know, it's not really what came to my mind. And this is why. It's because we don't really understand ADHD, especially the way that it presents in girls, right? And so I've been doing, you know me, I was like, okay, this is what it is. Boom. What do I need to know? So I ordered the books. I'm reading the articles. I'm like doing all the research, trying to make sure I understand it. And two things, have been on my mind. One, I regret that I was a teacher for some 16 years without really understanding ADHD. And I thought back to all the students whose lives I had touched. And I was tasked with educating them without even fully understanding what they were dealing with and what that meant for what they needed from me. Okay, so that's one thing. But then also just thinking about, okay, so now what does my child need from me in this moment? How can I rise to the occasion to meet this moment for my child? And so one of the things I would say to you to Tattooed Paleo is, you know, one, I'm going to post some resources, some articles that I found particularly helpful that actually break down what we have wrong and what doctors have had wrong about ADHD all these years. And that was super helpful. So I'm going to put those resources up on our Instagram and our Facebook. But, you know, children with ADHD struggle with transitions. And could there be a bigger transition than what we are in right now? I mean, it'd be hard to imagine it. And so for me, it's been about grace, offering a lot of grace and not imposing my will on my child. So you said that you have, you know, a son, you're working full time. You have other kids at home. Your son struggles with ADHD and anxiety really comes with the ADHD. And so that's not surprising at all. And so I would say, know your child. What does your son, what is he interested in? Kids with ADHD are really, their brains are driven by their interests. And so know what your son is interested in and don't be worried about giving him copious amounts of time to focus on that thing, right? And think like, how can I make this, if it's video games, how can I make this have an education spin? I was shocked. I have a 13-year-old son who's obsessed with video games. And he was talking to me about Minecraft one day. And I was so surprised at the intricacies of it. And I was like, oh, he's learning, right? Like, he's like building things and planning and thinking through them and problem solving. And I was like, oh, okay. I was impressed. And so then I was like, okay, why don't you go play Minecraft? You know, like whatever that is, or a Prodigy math game that my daughter who has ADHD, now she's obsessed with, because, you know, she gets to engage and build these characters that grow and get powers and everything based on how many math problems she solves. And so whatever their interest is, and I know students with kids with ADHD, their interests tend to change and they don't stick with something for long, but don't be afraid to let them completely indulge in that interest and see how you can build, you know, different education and curriculum elements around those interests. And then another thing I'll say is a schedule is super important for kids with ADHD, like because they struggle with transitions. When they have a schedule, they can predict the transition. They know when, oh, it's about to be lunchtime or I'm about to have some free time. I built in lots of free time to my daughter's schedule. To be honest, like this summer has been willy-nilly. It was like, watch as much Netflix as you want. I don't know what you're eating for lunch and I'm not going to, you know, fuss about the lack of vegetables. It was like, do what you want. But then when I started actually reading about ADHD and what kids needed, and one of those things was a schedule, I made everybody, all the kids in the house, a schedule, and it has made such a difference in her mood, in her behavior. You know, I'm not fighting her to clean up because she already knows that cleanup time is on there and it's super spelled out what that means. And so I found that to be super helpful. Again, those are just some things that have worked for me. I've got 5 kids at home. I'm working full time. It is difficult, but
I'm going to school.
You said what? And going to school, right? Oh my gosh. Right. And trying to earn a doctorate all at the same time. But those are some ways that I've helped my child to manage their anxiety around these times. And then like if they're having a day where it's just not happening, okay. You know what? It's just not happening. I think most parents would be shocked to know just how little of the actual school day is spent on instruction. By the time you do lunch and recess and transitions and bathroom breaks and announcements and special programming and all that kind of stuff, like you're talking about 3 hours maybe of actual, you know, instruction. And so if your kid is having a tough time, okay, today's stay in your pajamas. I'll write your teacher a note and it's all going to be fine. So that would be my response. Blanca, anything to add there?
No, you know what I would just add, and this is something that we were talking about yesterday, is that these are just good practices in general, right? Like like operating with a schedule is a good practice, like, right? And all those things.
No matter what.
And reading your child and saying like, you know, maybe today is just not going to work for us today because just not going to work, but it's part of it too. So, I mean, I don't have anything else to add. Obviously you've had that experience. But yeah, these are good practices with all of our children. And so like you, my kids have been all willy nilly and we need to get a schedule going. So you need to send me yours over and then we follow what y'all doing. I'm like, listen, this is what her kids doing. This is what we doing. So,
girl, I am also taking cues from all of my friends. I got one friend, girl. She's like super mom, okay? She's a professor, and she's got two kids and a husband. And, girl, she's like, her daughter has a charity. Shout out to my boo, Chelsea, from Chelsea's Charity. Her daughter has a charity, and they're like running this thing. Like, huh?
I forgot I know her dad. We used to work together.
With Charnay?
Yes.
What?
Shout out to Charnay. You know, we used to work at, you know the organization we worked for.
Yeah. Okay. It's such a small world. Oh my gosh. But yeah, girl, my girl Candace, she's a superwoman. And so she was on the news and she was talking about, you know, setting up summer camps, and she had made like t-shirts for the family, and each kid had to plan a week of summer camp. And I was like, damn, I am slacking. I was like, everybody,
no.
We're not
going to do, whether you're a teacher or whether you're a parent, we're not going to compare ourselves to all these people. That will be the demise of our
I know, but still, no. Okay. I was inspired. Let's say that I was inspired. She gave me an idea. Yes. And but how about Zaya, my baby? She was the only one that actually went through with it. Girl, she planned a heck of a camp. I was so proud of her. So anyhow, listen, you're right, Blanca. We're all doing our best.
You know what I think it's time for?
What?
I think it's time for our closings. That we need to close, because it sounds like the air. We all need a little bit of affirming right now, Ray.
Right, you're right.
Affirming.
Yes.
That's what it is. So like,
me, Blanca, what affirmation do you want to leave our listeners and me with, so I can stop comparing myself to all these super moms out there?
Well, listen, now I wasn't gonna say that one, but that's one that we should just take away from it, right? Like, we are our own unique stories, so let's embrace that our own unique stories are unique stories, and sometimes we can inspire others. But that wasn't it. For years, folks have known my tagline everywhere I go, like every email I've sent, has always been from the Young Lawyers Party, a Puerto Rican revolutionary group around the time of Black Panther Party. And they're known for saying pa'lante, siempre pa'lante, which means forward, always forward. And so this is some uncharted territory. We are all in this. And so, you know, we move forward, and it's not going to be pretty, and it's not going to be without bumps and bruises and some scars, but there's also going to be some beauty at the end, hopefully. And I know people have already, unfortunately, gone through a lot. And so I can only hope, you know, that we will keep moving forward. And my hope is that we actually invest back in this concept of community, and what does it mean to be in community with people. And community can be small, and community can be big, but that we are, in fact, surrounded by other folks who are in similar situations. So let's tap into those people. So pa'lante, my people, mi gente, pa'lante, siempre pa'lante.
Pa'lante, siempre pa'lante. Did I say that right?
You said it. You got it.
I like that. Great. Well, my affirmation as we close out this season, oh my gosh, our first season, it's crazy, is really something very similar, which is basically, in the words of the poet and the philosopher Kendrick Lamar, it's going to be all right, right? Like, we are all going to be okay. Like, let's wear our masks, let's social distance. You know, let's get our computers hooked up to Zoom and try not to miss the links. But if we do miss the links, if we do miss the meetings, if we're not sure what the heck is going on, it is all going to be okay. If you're a parent, if you are an educator, we are all putting our best foot forward, and we are not going to permanently ruin our children during this moment. This will be a part of their story. It will be a part of our collective story. Mm-hmm. And like Blanca said, let's lean on the power of community. And if we do, I really do think it's all going to be all right. Unless Donald Trump gets reelected, then maybe not. No, I'm kidding.
Ooh, somebody throw it for you. Know, we have thrown in, huh? And in season two, I have Woke at Work with Kamala coming in here.
Yes, let's have Kamala as a guest, girl. Talk about woke at work. Woo! She about to be woke at work, honey. All right, but thank you all. This has been just like one of my favorite things to work on. And Blanca as my partner in crime, and all of you all listening. Blanca, did you see the reviews I posted?
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. I said keep on posting those reviews. Those reviews are like, yeah, I mean, we've ever wanted, the vision for this was to just bring light to stories of women of color, and that's our hope that we've done that, and that, and we thank folks who have been listening. I've gotten personal texts, personal messages from friends and family who have been listening, and so, but you know, listening to it is one aspect of it, and it's affirming for those of us who identify as women of color, but for those of us who work with women of color, just continue to think about the stories as you're making key decisions that may impact us. So
that's right. Awesome. Well, thank you, and see you in season 2, everybody.
We trying to stay woke at work. We trying to stay woke at work. How about you? You trying to stay woke at work? If you trying to stay woke at work, stay true, stay true. We trying to stay woke at work. We trying to stay woke at work. How about you? You trying to stay woke at work? Woke at work, woke at work. Stay true, stay true.